हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, 284. All rites ordained in the Veda, burnt oblations and other sacrifices pass away. But know that the syllable Om is imperishable, and it is Brahman, and the Lord of creatures, Prajapati.
Tomorrow, we didn't read the 283 last time. We only came to 282.
Oh, okay. The monosyllable Om is the highest Brahman. Three suppressions of the breath are the three suppressions of the breath are the best form of austerity. But nothing surpasses the savitri, as truthfulness is better than silence. So here the okay. So see, it's being brought out as the glory of Omkara, or the transcendental sound. Because the other activities, one may perform so many other activities, but the results of them will eventually fade. Right? But Om being transcendental, that doesn't. Right? So the chanting of the holy name is the best form. Right? And then three suppressions of the breath, then generally that means the pranayam. You know, it's used in the puja or like this, it comes before the chanting of the Gayatri. Then that is the best form of austerity. In other words, being part of the chanting, then that's there, because you chant, it also controls the breath. But nothing surpasses the Gayatri, right? Because these others are there because truthfulness is better than silence. Right? Because when you're doing pranayam or these other kind of things, or let's say controlling the senses, then there's silence, means there's no activity. So activity is better than non-activity. But here it's used the term truth. So truth means that activity has to be in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, technically, it's not truth. Right? Because the Gayatri is talking about the Lord. People may understand that, may interpret it that way or not, but the point is that's what it's doing. Right? So in other words, point is this, the chanting of the holy name is the best of all the activities. An offering consisting of muttered prayers is 10 times more efficacious than a sacrifice performed according to the rules of the Veda. Right? In other words, the different rituals of the Veda that are connected with the Brahmanas for the Karmakanda. So 10 times better than that is your muttered prayers or your Gayatri. So it's 10 times more powerful than the Vedic sacrifices. Right? A prayer which is inaudible to others surpasses it 100 times. And the mental recitation of sacred text 1,000 times. Right? Because the mental recitation, you have to be more focused. So the concentration is complete. If you're saying it a little bit loud, a little bit where you can hear it, no one else can hear it. That's the meaning of muttered prayers. You know, it's just you're chanting Gayatri. Like you can hear, no one else can hear. So that's 10 times more than yajna. right? The Vedic yajnas. But 10 times more than that is when it's quieter than that, right? Inaudible, right? And then 10 times more than that is actually, yeah, the mental recitation. But we see that Haridas Thakur then mentions even more than that is a very loud recitation of the holy name. Because then not only yourself, because this other is what benefit you'll get. But then by chanting it loudly, then everybody else gets benefit, so that pleases the Lord, so that's the most beneficial. Does that make sense? So this concept then is coming here from the Veda.
So that's why they have the nights, these loudspeakers also sometimes here, you hear them over the night.
I don't think they would quote Manu or Haridas Thakur if you went and asked them. I would think that they just think that's how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
Right? If the volume's not turned up to where it distorts, it's not a party. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Some people, they say that because of this progression, the chanting of japa should be done like silently, because it's superior for this.
It's superior than a little bit loud. It just means the focus has to be more. So what's the meaning? Meaning that japa done with more focus is more important than japa done without focus. Right? So either completely silently in the mind or very loudly, both of these are going to catch your attention. You know what I'm saying? But most devotees don't use that. They just use very quiet.
So to make it into a rule is to...
To make it into a rule means they've read this and somehow or another at that moment there was an epiphany and now it's their life's purpose to establish that particular one rule as the overarching rule of all other things. You understand?
Yeah.
In other words, everything has to have its balance, the time, place, and circumstance. Let's say you're sitting on a bus, right? How are you going to chant?
Quiet.
Yeah. Inaudibly, maybe in the mind. Let's say you're sitting in the temple room. How you chant? Right?
As loud as it is, just hear it.
Yeah, like that. What happens if you're out on Harinam?
Very loud.
Yeah, because you imagine everyone going by and doing mental Harinam. Like that, you know? It may not work so good. You understand? So according to your situation is how you decide. So it's not that this one's the id and that's what you want. No, it's just pointing out is that these other, because you have to be more and more focused to do it. Does that make sense? That's the idea. Yes.
Is it vibration with the Mahamantra when you're
speaking? Yeah, of course. No, because the voice is still also material energy. So it's the chit potency that is doing the work. It's just how much you're focusing on the name. You know what I'm saying? But the general thing is by chanting it louder or stuff, then you're focused, because then you have more than one sense working. So that's the idea, is to catch the mind between different senses.
The reason why I asked is because someone said that it's focused to put earplugs in, because the mantra has to enter your ears.
No, that's going, Rupa Goswami is mentioning when you're chanting, then the dancing on the tongue, and then when it enters the ears, it's another. But the point is the audible, it's already happening in the heart. So then he says, then it conquers the heart. So if the mental chanting is going on, it's already in the heart. You know, so it's a matter of semantics. See, the difficulty is this. Because we're so used to form being our only identity and only conception, form and action, because you don't get results without form and action, and you don't enjoy if there's no results, right? And to enjoy, you have to control the form and activities. So the central aspect being, of course, Abhideya is the central aspect, but what we look at in Abhideya is the form and its actions. Right? So we forget that devotional service is that those form and actions are used in Krishna's service. It's not the forms and actions. Right? Because these forms and actions are simply the reflection of the original. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So then we get too distracted by these things and take the forms as being overly important. They're important, but they're secondary important. You could say, oh, but you couldn't do anything without them, but if you don't accomplish Krishna consciousness with whatever it is, it has zero meaning. For us, maybe for the materialists, you'll get an award or something, but does that make sense? So we always have to, the balance is whatever it is that we take as being very important in our life, we have to be able to discern between what's primary and what's secondary. And once we do that, then we can get the proper balance, because devotional service has 64 aspects, right? And so all of them have some purpose or meaning, but all of them are supporting five. Right, but of those five, the most important is associating with devotees. Because if you're in the association of devotees, then you'll chant, then you'll hear Bhagavatam, then you'll worship the deity, and then you'll live in the Dham. So it's the most important, but generally that's not talked about. At best, we'll get up to the holy name. And generally that's at the expense of deity worship. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's always something has to be curve to, you know what I'm saying? So we're so used to that. There's, you know, there's this one rock here, and if we all want this rock, somebody's going to get it, somebody's not. Rather than there's plenty of rocks, you know. So the devotional services, it's not a problem that you won't have. So we don't have to fight over it. The holy name is glorious on its own. Deity worship is glorious on its own. Each one is glorious. It's not that one is glorious because the other's not. That's where the critical environment comes up, is we criticize someone else, because if we can criticize, that means I'm seeing things that maybe they don't, so that puts me in a superior position. So by criticizing, it creates the superiority. So we use the same thing, is that, you know, the holy name, we have to put down someone else. You know, or, you know, if we're going to boost up the women, we have to put down the men. Or if we're going to boost up the kids, we have to put down the, you know, the parents or the teachers. You know, if we're going to boost up the cows, we have to put down everybody else. You know, all the humans. You know, except for the farmer. Right? You know, he knows what's happening. You know, so like this, we have to. But the point is it's all Krishna, so it's all glorious. But at the same time, there is a hierarchy. So the holy name, as a principle, even though the deity worship is one of those that it's, by performing it, one can't actually judge the results. It's so great. Still, the holy name is greater than that. But the point is without Pancharatra, there is no Malecha or Yavana going to be chanting the holy name. Bas, finished. You know? Maybe you could leave out Jayananda. He'd be the exception. But you know what I'm saying? It's only because we get up in the morning, take our bath, go to the temple, wear tilak, wear neck beads, you know, do guru puja, do tulsi. Otherwise, we wouldn't work those into our day. You know? We wouldn't work it into our day. We wouldn't work japa into... the only reason we're chanting, well, this is japa time, Prabhu. But that's japa time, not because Bhagavat says it's japa time, it's because Pancharatra says it's japa time. You know, we eat at 9 o'clock. Why 9 o'clock? You could eat, means as soon as the sun's up. As soon as you get out of bed, you could eat. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? But what regulates it? You finished all the puja, all the sadhana, then you're eating. So New Vrindavan, they get up at 2, finish their japa, their whole morning program, by 6 o'clock, and eat at 6. So the point is you've finished all your sadhana. Then there's prasad, then there's your daily service. That's Pancharatra. And then again in the evening, then it's spiritual activity. That's Pancharatra. Without that, there is no question anybody be chanting Hare Krishna on a regular basis. Does that make sense? So, because Prabhupada already tried that, up to 1970, and then he found that it didn't work. It needed the structure of Pancharatra. And even then, he had added it in, but only very minimal. He didn't make it so structured. You know what I'm saying? If you're chanting 24 hours, you're already up at the Brahma Muhurta anyway. So you'll get the benefit of the Brahma Muhurta. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is that, but there is a hierarchy. Bhagavat is more prominent than Pancharatra, which is more prominent than Vedic. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so that's the idea is how to appreciate the balance, understanding the priority. Is that make sense? Then we can create balance. The difficulty is we'll always overemphasize something. Like someone's, you know, just into Hari Nam, or someone else is just into Kirtan, or someone else is just into this, or someone just into that. There's no balance. So it works for them. And if that's what they want to do, and they're by their example, they encourage other people, that's great. But then to say, oh, no, that's not the real thing, you know what I'm saying? Because there's starting to be a push more towards, like, it's not politically incorrect about Hari Nam nowadays. Or it's they're starting to work on that, trying to break that down. So as soon as that's cleared, I know there'll be a wave of that. And it's one of the first things as well. What are the boys doing about, you know, Hari Nam? You know, what training are you giving? You know, it's like, you know, but last year you were complaining about English. You know, so, I mean, how many things are we supposed to do in a day? You know, so, you know, when you start taking English classes, then we'll go out every day on Hari Nam. You know, like that. You know, let's create a balance here. You know what I'm saying? So the point is these things always come along. Because anyway, talk to, oh, why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? Because that's what's important to them. Right? So the point is you're trying to create a balance according to your situation, your conditioning, what works for you. There's general points that are there for everybody. But then there's the specifics. Okay, so that means that it's not about the sound vibration going into the ear. That is, if you're using hearing, you know, you're using the tongue and you're using the ear, which is the standard way of doing it. But the point is that the mental is also one of them. Haridas Thakur would chant one lakh of rounds quietly, you know, just to himself, you know, Hare Krishna, like this. One lakh he would chant in the mind, and one lakh he would chant at the top of his voice, like that. And I think the loud one was the last one. So then that was during the night, and then people didn't really appreciate it. Local villagers found that to be a bit of a disturbance. So he'd use all three. You know what I'm saying? But that doesn't mean, well, Hari Das Thakur, I got to, you know, how we do it, that's four rounds for us. He did three lakhs, I mean, how do we do that? You know, then there'll be a whole thing, you know, so five and a third rounds, I will, you know what I'm saying? It's like that. You know, it's like, you know, you can put a little marker on your beads, you know, when you get to it, okay, that's that third, you know, so now it's that. You know, that's... The idea is you take these and... Where the acharyas say something is recommended or it should be done, then that we take as primary, you know, more important. But at the same time, we have to see those things in relationship to what is its purpose so that we know. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a discussion by the four Kumaras. I forget with who. No, it's not them, it's someone else, and they're referring to a conversation with the four Kumaras. That someone said that we're chanting, it's the material tongue, is vibrating the material air, that's moving through the material ether, it's landing on the material ear, and it's being, you know, digested, therefore, by the material mind and intelligence. So where's the spiritual? And so they say is that that's the mechanics of it, that's the vehicle, but it's carrying the chit potency. So that's why Prabhupada says you have to hear the holy name from the bona fide devotee. Otherwise, there's no chit potency. So these outside people, they're singing, but they're just singing. It's just moving the ether, the material air and ether. That's why there's no spiritual effect from hearing them chanting. Though you can pick up from them maybe some tunes or mridanga beats or, you know, some other techniques like that. But there's nothing to learn there in the way of this actual spiritual. Because where's the chit potency? You know what I'm saying? So if the chit potency is there, whether you're using the tongue and the ear or using the mind, it doesn't matter. It's still the chit potency is there. Otherwise, what does it mean you meditate on Krishna? You know, so if it didn't go through your ears, then how? Because the principle even to chant quietly still came through the ears. You know what I'm saying? So it came through the authorized chant. Is that okay? Yes.
Raj, I know this is a side point. For the person born in the West, lecture background, is it that they can only take up the Panchratra path?
Because of Bhagavad. That's all. It means only because there is the chanting are we able to take part in the Panchratra or the Vedic. Otherwise, there's no qualification. There's no piety. But to be able to sustain the chanting, we need because of our conditioning, we need the support of the Panchratra. That's why the Panchratra is given, is because it supports conditioning. If we're not conditioned, you don't need it at all. There's no importance of that. You know? But the Panchratra is, and the Panchratra is Vedic, that is focused just on Vishnu. So therefore, it's perfect for the Vaishnavas, because we follow the Vedic culture, but we follow those aspects that are connected to the Lord. So here, Panchratra's already drawn those out, so it makes it very easy. Then anything else we draw out, you know, according to here. But now here it's been given again on the Vedic elements, on how, but its purpose is to connect it to Krishna. So you know that what it mentions here is then what can be connected, right? But one has to understand. So here, the four Paka Yajnas and those sacrifices which are enjoined by the rules of the Veda are altogether not equal in value to a 16th part of the sacrifice consisting of muttered prayers. So you get 16 times the benefit. The four Paka Yajnas and that, they're part of here. Vritti. The four Paka Yajnas refer to the Pancha Mahayajnas with the exception of the Brahma Yajna. These are defined in the following verse. Teaching and studying is the sacrifice offered to Brahman, Brahma Yajna. So other than that, then the offerings of water and food called Tarpana, the sacrifice to the maize. The burnt oblation to the sacrifice offered to the gods, the Bali offering that offered to the Buddhas, and a hospitable reception of guests, the offering to men. So these four are only a 16th value of chanting the Gayatri. Right? We're talking Brahma Gayatri. So then you have the Pancharatra Gayatris, you know, which are directly connected with the, you know, deities like that. Undoubtedly, a Brahmin reaches the highest goal by muttering prayers only. Whether he performs other rites or not, he who befriends all creatures is declared to be a true Brahmin. And now here they threw this point in. What would this balance? He who befriends all creatures is declared to be a true Brahmin. Right? So undoubtedly a Brahmin reaches the highest goal by this, but he's considered to be a true Brahmin is he who befriends all creatures. We see a balance here? What if I take this thing, okay, muttering prayers is the only way, even if he doesn't, whether he performs other rites or not, so what is my natural conclusion? Right? That's all there is. So all other things are that. So you're doing other activities. What will I do? Right? I'll come up to you and tell you you're wasting your time in all this.
Maya.
It's all Maya and all that. That's why this other part. He who befriends all creatures is declared to be a true Brahman. So that means you can have these understandings and still be cultured.
Which is nice.
Yeah. So the point is you can mention something, and if it works, nice. But if not, because the point is according to their nature. But our point is that the holy name is the most important. So someone who's chanting the holy name, whether he does other rituals or not. But when we're saying rituals, that means other rituals of elevation. We don't mean whether you take your bath or not. It means if you're transcendental, then don't worry about it. But then, because then you're also transcendental that no one wants to be around you, you know, so then. Does this make some sense? Right? In other words, we're thinking Manu is going to be this really hardcore, you know, kind of thing, you know, where everybody's in Maya and that these are the rules. No, the thing is it's still about balance. Human life means is you have to know the essence, which is serving the Lord. Then you have to be a friend to all living beings, to all creatures. It says all creatures, not just humans. You know, like that. So, but that's what Gita says. He who is following all these nice things and is a friend to all living entities, Krishna always throws that in. Because it's not about, well, I am into this, therefore everybody else who's into it is great, and whoever's not is in Maya. Krishna doesn't appreciate that. It's still devotional, but it's not advanced. Right? It's not that pleasing. So it's pleasing when you means you actually have the qualities and you're able to appreciate others will be in their position according to whatever they're doing. You know, and if you can encourage them or help, great. If you can't, then don't worry about it. Yes.
Does this relate to always remember Krishna and never forget him? Is there a similar...
Ultimately everything is given. Well, always remember you chant the holy name.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And whenever you're doing other activities, be nice. Or
Yeah, you could say. Okay. But you're befriending all creatures because they're all parts and parcels of Krishna.
Yeah.
So it's basically the Bhagavan platform means it includes the appreciation of other living entities. Because Brahman and Paramatma you may or may not. It's only actually pleasing. Because Brahman, it's intellectual. You can see how Krishna's entered into everything. You see how everything's connected to him. Right? But it's because to see like that is because it's Krishna who's doing that. And you want to serve Krishna and you're distracted by Maya. So therefore, that breaks the illusion. But the point is Krishna is a person, so therefore all living entities are parts and parcels of him. So technically you should be nice, so that means a true Brahmana. Someone's a Brahmana, even if they're not a friend of all creatures. But it's not what we would say is the, you know, the perfection of what Krishna calls a Brahmana.
It could also say that the person who sees the dog eater, the...
Who sees all as equal? You know? But still, it means even you see they're equal, still it's a matter of your interaction with them. Because befriends means he interacts with all people. Because you can also see all equally and not really interact and not get involved. You know?
Yes. Well, in Bhagavad Gita, there is this verse, austerity of the feet. There is also I don't remember exactly,
yeah.
But it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Means he's speaking pleasantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we say that because Brahmana doesn't take part in administration?
Who said they don't take part in administration?
No, I heard previously from someone. So that's why they are not.
They're not administrators.
Okay.
But let's say you have a Brahman who's a minister to the king. He's taking part in administration. But administration is not his duty.
That's why he's not enemy to anybody.
No, but it means Yudhishthira was also a friend to all living creatures, and he was an administrator. You know what I'm saying? The cowherd men, they were friends to everybody, and they were vicious. You know what I'm saying? So that's not there. That is something, this is something of ashram. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that anybody can do. But the idea is the person who's able to balance all that, that's better. That someone who has the basic qualities and is following the lifestyle and occupation of a Brahman, they're a Brahman. But here he's bringing out the other aspect of true Brahman means that he's caught these two aspects of chanting the holy name and, you know, and being you know, kind to all living entities. That's the actual, in other words, of all the practices of, you know, of rituals and sacrifice and austerities for upliftment, the best is chanting the holy name. And of all aspects within ashram of dealing in good qualities, being equal and being, you know, friendly towards all living entities is the highest thing. Because to do that, you have to be humble, you have to be tolerant, you have to respect everybody else, you have to not expect respect for yourself. Unless you're following those four, you can't be friends with everybody. You understand? So it already includes. Yes.
This is an old book, the Manasamhita.
Very old. We're talking here going back, you know, probably millions of years.
So today we have the modern context.
No, modern context is a way of looking at something. It doesn't mean that the facts are modern.
Well, like the other day, the Buddha's giving class and brought up the issue of divorce and how the concept of divorce and different, you know, reasonings about why divorce is discouraged. And then one devotee came out with a computer and he had a hard-line quote from the 23rd chapter of the 4th canto about how divorce is a man-made law, it shouldn't even be on the books.
Right.
But then, like I know, like my friend Martin, he got divorced a couple times, and then after divorcing two women, then he met Mrs. Hausner, who is like the better wife for him.
Well, that's what I say, third time's a charm.
Yeah, so then if he hadn't divorced the other two women, then how could he have found this?
How could he have found this? Okay, that's there. But let's try another approach. What if he was actually trained in what marriage is? What is a husband? What is a wife? What is a parent? What is a child? You know, what is a family? What is a community? And he actually understood those elements. Then he might have been more careful about, you know, picking his wife. And so then he would have married the third one the first time. You know what I'm saying? So just because the modern society is uneducated and uncultured doesn't mean that it as a method is good. You know what I'm saying? If people use it, fine. Tribals do all kinds of stuff. But the Vedas is showing how a human can behave where he saves himself the trouble. You know, because they're talking about it, no, divorce is fine. But the point is going through two divorces, you know, finding someone, thinking this is it, getting married and then having it fall apart, and then going through that all again and again. Isn't that a bit tiring? You know what I'm saying? Is that ideal? You know what I'm saying?
Not as much as just...
And not as much as knowing what you're doing and going and finding what you're looking for. Because the point is this. Let's say the girl, she gets married when she's 28, okay? And she finds Mr. Right. Okay? So, but before Mr. Right, there's every chance, now we're talking about, you know, the Western culture, she could have been with 30 other men. Not at all a stretch of the imagination. So, but the point is if she knew what she was looking for, she wouldn't have bothered with those other 30 men. She would have just waited, because the point is when you're going to get married, you're going to get married. So, if she hadn't been with those other 30 men, then she still would have gotten married at 28. But she wouldn't have had to go through all the trouble of all that and now have, you know, issues with men and security issues and all kinds of other issues. She would have just focused on whatever she wanted to do and, you know, her education or her career or, you know, other members of the family or other hobbies and all that and been very good at them. Then when she gets married, then she can focus on that and then everything's nice. Right? Or if she knew that that's what you're looking for, then she wouldn't have been looking for at these other guys and she might have found Mr. Right earlier. So that's what we're recommending. Right? But I can recommend this until I'm blue in the face. And I'm telling you, nobody gives a damn. I mean, just nobody cares. Right? But now if I say you can't get divorced, what is it supposed to invoke in your thought pattern? Commitment? Okay. But what does that mean? If you're going to commit yourself, what does it mean? If you got one shot, are you going to just take any shot? Or are you going to be careful about what you do? But you never hear that come up in the conversation about divorce. Never. I've never heard it come up. It's always about it's fine, everybody's got time, place, service, that, no, but this, that, you know. The only thing about the end, The point is, if there's no divorce, that means I got to do it right the first time. So what is right? That's what it's supposed to do. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. And now it's time to inquire. But that's not what we do. It's whatever I'm doing whimsically, and it's opposed, I will fight that tooth and nail to maintain my right of independent, whimsical mode of ignoranceness. It never comes up in a conversation. So if there's no divorce, then that means I should know what I'm doing. Like if you want to go, hey, I got some money, I want to buy a car. You know? But if I tell you, you only have one shot in this lifetime to buy a car, what would the intelligent person do?
Buy an ambassador.
Last forever. I would probably go for a tank myself. You know? Just think, you know, in the parking, you know, when you come along, you, that other guy goes to go into your parking spot, and you nudge him up a little bit, he'll move. So, or if not, then you just move the barrel.
Well, that example, I
think. You understand? So that means then you would educate yourself. Right? You would educate yourself. But then that means you have to even know what you're educating yourself about. So you have to know what a human being is. Because a non-human being simply works on sentiment only. Just what he feels like. That's why the terms used as a tribal, is they just go on their own feelings. They may make, everybody has a similar feeling, that's why they're a tribe. And then they make rules to make sure that your feelings don't step on my feelings. Right? You know, you go out, you know, you club the lady on their head and drag her home by her hair, and then that's your lady. You know, but it's not that, it's just whatever lady you like you club on the head, it has to be someone that who hasn't already been clubbed on the head. Yeah, you understand? So then they'll make rules.
Another example, I've read a number of times in Prabhupada's books that all girls should be married by their menstrual period.
No, wait. So, do you understand the principle that we're working at here? Don't try to pull out another point. Because the thing is, do you understand the nature of women? If you understand that, then we can discuss this point. If you don't, just using it as a point of time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of things that people say, well, that just doesn't really apply now. For various examples.
Okay, but you know...
Why don't we take
Kama Sutra. Okay? Kama Sutra is a very old book. Originally, the knowledge was originally given by Nandi. Right? Lord Shiva's bull. Right? You take a bull as quite masculine and, you know, knowing what he's doing, right? So, the original scripture is in 1,000 chapters, right? You know, modern man thinks he's really hot in the sack. There's 1,000 chapters, right? But with time, that's lost, right? And it comes down to, I think, 150. Is all that's left out of 1,000. And that, then different authors, then they write on different parts of it, because it's in 7 main sections. And then one writes on 1 section each. So then that's compiled together, and that becomes your Kama Sutra. Right? Okay? But, yeah, it's a small book. But the point is that's old. That's ancient. That's archaic. So now, modern man, technically, if we follow the rule, the point that you're making about how everything's changed, modern man, it's just like so old-fashioned to have sex. Modern man, you know, it's just beyond all these things. He doesn't breathe air anymore. He doesn't have sex. He doesn't go to the toilet. You know, like that. He doesn't eat. These are all old-fashioned things, you know, like that. You know, walking on the ground, you know, gravity, all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Saying like that. You know, it's like... You know, the sense of ownership, the sense of business, the sense of administration, the sense of scholarship. These are all ancient, archaic things. So, you know, why are we following any of these things, you know? You know, family life, that you marry someone or they're your partner. You know what I'm saying? You say, oh, no, they don't. They live de facto. Go ahead, walk into the guy's apartment, walk off with his woman. You're not married. What does it matter? What's going to happen? Is he going to like it? No, because God made the rules that way. Modern man is just as much bound and following the rules as before, just he doesn't want to acknowledge it. That's all. So all it is that you've gone from adults to children. And children don't like to acknowledge that something's the way it is. And that's all. It's not that it's different now. And on your point, girls are already thinking about marriage when they're, you know, 2-3 years old, when they're playing, you know, Barbie and Ken. What is Barbie and Ken doing? Right? Are they going out fighting, killing the monsters and all that kind of thing? That's what the boys are doing. They're getting married. And they do it every day. Right? You can go up to probably any girl here, you know, 12, 13 year old, ask her, what kind of house would you, in the future, what would you see yourself as you had your own house? What would it be like? What kind of furniture? What kind of curtains? What kind of clothes would you want to have? What would your kitchen be like? What would your bathroom be like? You know, even what kind of rug on the floor in your bathroom? And they could give you answers. You go up to 12-year-old boy, so in the future when you have a house, you know, and you're planned, you're married, you know, what about that? Huh? You know what I'm saying? You understand? So the Vedas aren't wrong. That's the way a girl thinks. The problem is girls aren't supported. They're not protected. Protected means that their nature as women, you create the environment that can prosper within. That rarely you ever see anybody understand or do. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't know what a man is. The man thinks, I'm the center of attention. So when the Shastra says the man's, you know, the senior, the woman's the junior, you know, and the woman shouldn't do anything independent, then the man thinks it's all about him. You know, I'm the boss. Whatever I say, she's my servant, boss. You know what I'm saying? But if we're being modern man who's practical, wouldn't it be cheaper to hire a servant? Much cheaper. You don't have to buy them diamonds on their anniversary and, you know, take them to Bali for a vacation. Right? They have to take their own self to a vacation on their vacation. You know what I'm saying? So they're not even smart.
Plus you could change them when you want to.
Yeah, plus you could change them. You understand? So if we were really being pragmatic like modern man claims he is, then why would he be dealing with all these old archaic kind of ideas? You know what I'm saying? But the point is he thinks he's the center, but the man is never the center of the household. It's the woman who's the center. And so if you do that, you're providing the environment in which she can be the center. That's protecting a woman. Now go throw that out in the circle of those persons having this discussion about whether divorce is ideal or not, and none of them will understand this. So, even they get married again, okay, finally. But what happened? What happened in the third time of marriage? Why did the third one work?
Learned the lessons.
He learned his lessons. In other words, now he will let his wife kind of, you know, manage things or direct things in that, which he wouldn't with the first and wouldn't with the second. But now he's too old and too tired, and so, you know, and so he's willing to let her, you know, do the stuff. That's why it works. And I'm not joking here.
So he's just doing what could work in
the... If he was doing what in the third marriage, you know, during the first would have worked. But people don't know what they're doing. That's the problem. So that's why the laws of Manu are laid down, so that we don't do stuff that is going to create problems for ourselves or others. That's all it's defining. But you also have to understand the culture of what it's talking about, because it's not just a rule. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. It's not just rule. I mean, it's just like this. If it wasn't a problem, why is it all our 12, 13-year-old girls are walking around, you know, trying to catch the attention of the boys? why do they do their hair up, and why do they do this and that, and where they're, you know, you got to take the dupatta. You don't spread that. You got to get it so it's just, you know, just like that, you know? So no one can say, looking from here, I'm not covering. But if you look from here, hey, you can see the whole thing. And you look at each one of them, they do exactly the same thing. So why are they doing that? Just because it's something girls do? What's the purpose of it? To attract boys. So you're going to tell me that the modern age girls aren't trying to attract boys from 12 years old? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's going on. So nothing's changed. It's just one is the girls are untrained, and two, there's no environment of protection, so it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? If they got married at 12, or they got married at 22, or they got married at 32, they're going to have the same problem. No men will take care of them properly. Does that make sense? So the culture itself, the Western culture is not a culture. We're arguing as if you have an alternative culture. No, you remove culture and what's left, and then you argue that that's good. There isn't any culture. You understand? You know, if somebody is involved with someone else's wife, that's bad, right? Now, there's a book written, God only knows when. When was the Scarlet A written? You know, and it was about a time that, you know, Plymouth Rock or something like that, back in the 1500s in America. But the same thing goes on today. So if we're so progressed, what's the problem? We're not. It's just a matter of we pick and choose what we like for ourselves at the moment. And that's all. You understand? So it's inconsistent. It's not scientific. The rules are there. The structure is there. But no one's acknowledging it or following it in a proper way. So it doesn't function. So the Vedas are trying to show how to scientifically deal with it. Right? Now, as you notice as we go through here, am I talking very strongly about the particular following of certain rules here? Are we discussing what's the principle that's going on in these rules to understand that and apply that? You understand? But these discussions where either they're always pro-Vedic, they're only looking at the form, or the most fun part is when someone who's always against the Vedic thing, well, if a rule of the Vedas does support what they're doing, oh, they push it so hard. But they couldn't care less about the Vedas. You know, so that's cheating. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sometimes devotees like to say a lot about how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, feed the meat. If you have to, whatever it takes to get them to be Krishna.
Yeah, and so who's doing it? Who's doing it? Name me the person who just quoted that point. Are they doing it? Are they going out there risking everything to make sure that every karmi they meet is taking up Krishna consciousness? Or are they just saying that so they can sit at their house and follow the program however they like?
Well, they're serving tea and chocolate and quoting that.
Serving tea and chocolate.
In a restaurant.
Okay. But are they preaching to those people?
Yeah.
They're actually preaching.
Giving prasadam
and
kirtan.
And?
Prabhupada's books.
Okay. And do they ever tell them about Krishna and stuff like that? Do the people know it's Krishna prasad that they're eating?
Not exactly.
Yeah. So then how is that preaching?
Well, it says Krishna Cafe on the front door.
I've seen in Calcutta Krishna Bibis. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I mean, it's nice. You know, but are they dressed as devotees?
No.
Yeah, so then how will they know it has anything to do with Hare Krishna? You know what I'm saying? That is taking a point that we don't care what it is, if that's what it takes to make them comfortable to sit down and listen to philosophy, that's what we'll do. right? But they're selling tea and tea and chocolate so that people come to their restaurant so that they make money. Because if there was no tea and chocolate, they wouldn't get as much clientele. It's business. It's got nothing to do with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Because if they were quoting him, serve me. But you know what your sadhana would have to be to burn off that karma? You'd have to have damn good sadhana. You know what I'm saying? Because you are involved in serving me. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you better be doing some really crack sadhana. And you better be sure that those people are becoming Krishna conscious. Otherwise, what's the use? He wasn't doing it for business. He's giving this. If he was arranging that, if he fed meat and all that to the British karmis, he was paying for it himself. It wasn't a restaurant. They were invited over for spiritual discussions, but that's what he fed them so that they would be comfortable in the environment and be happy to sit around, because there was no concept in the British culture of vegetarian. But he didn't do that for Indians, because they know what vegetarian is. Nowadays, everybody knows what vegetarian is. You don't have to do that. You know what I'm saying? Those days aren't there. You know what I'm saying? You can get vegetarian stuff in Russia now, in the East Bloc. But in those times when they were talking about preaching there, there was only, you know, basically alcohol and meat there. You know, he just said, you know, you understand? But now it's available. You can get anything anywhere. So there's no need. You understand? So you have to know the purpose. Just the rule is for carrying the purpose. But if we just catch the rule and don't understand the context that the acharyas are discussing, we miss everything. Subduing the senses. A wise man should strive to restrain his organs, which run wild among alluring sensual objects, like like a charioteer his horses. Right, the charioteer pulls on the reins, controls. Right. So with the intelligence, then you're pulling on these things. Right. That's what controls. Right. So in other words, we connect things to the Lord. Those 11 organs which former sages have named, I will properly and precisely enumerate in due order. The ear, the skin, the eyes, the tongue, the nose is the fifth. The anus, the organ of generation, hands, feet, and the organ of speech named as the tenth. Five of them, the ear and the rest, according to their order, they call organs of sense. Five of them, the anus and the rest, organs of action. Right? So same thing. I mean, all the philosophy talks about this. Know that the internal organ, manas, is the 11th, which by its quality belongs to both sets. When it has been subdued, both those sets of five have been conquered. Right? So the organ should be restrained. The only way of doing that is by controlling the mind, not by separating the senses from the mind. No, the mind goes with the senses. It's part of both. It's the 11th organ, and it's part of both sets. Right? Like that. So when you control the mind, then you control the senses. Through the attachment of his organs to sensual pleasure, a man doubtlessly will incur guilt. But if he keeps them under complete control, he will attain success in gaining all his aims. It means all his aims, not only the, you know, material, and it means not only the spiritual, but also material. Because you can't attain any material gain by not controlling your senses. Mm. Right? Mm. Does that make sense? Right. Let us say the guy goes into a casino and he wants to win some quick money. Can he just see some money and grab it?
No.
Bad idea. Especially around there. You know. Can he just, you know, go up to any table and, you know, break in and start playing? No. It has to control himself. He has to dress nicely. He has to act nicely. He has to talk nicely. He has to follow the rules. So there's no such thing as not controlling the senses and being successful. Even in sin, you can't be successful unless you follow the rules. Does that make sense? you know. You know, you take the powder there, you got your credit card like that, then you put your ear there. It's not going to work.
Follow the rules.
Yeah, it means everything has to follow the rules. That's the point, is that everything has rules. But we're so foolish we can't see the rules that are already there. Because the point is because of atheism, we think that creation is separate from God. So we don't think that the creation runs under God's rules. That's the... Desire is never extinguished by the enjoyment of desired objects. Right? We have a desire and think, well, if I do that, then I'll get rid of it. No, it just it only grows stronger, like a fire fed with clarified butter. Right? So the only thing from that is then you can understand it won't go away. So therefore, better not to engage it. Does that make sense? The only advantage of engaging it is understanding that there's no advantage to engaging it. Is that? If one man should attain all those sensual enjoyments and another should renounce them all, the renunciation of all pleasure is far better than the attainment of them. Right? You'll get more. From giving up all sense pleasure, you'll get more than if you gain all sense pleasure. Those organs which are strongly attached to sensual pleasures cannot so effectively be restrained by abstinence from enjoyments as by a constant pursuit of true knowledge. Right? So even here, when he's talking about restraining the senses, he means by gaining true knowledge. And true knowledge means knowledge about Krishna. That's gained by understanding what's been given by Krishna through the acharyas and practicing it. So in other words, the senses can never be controlled as easily as if one performs devotional service. Right? You understand? Do we understand the language that's here? The language that's here is written so that all members of society, whether the karmis, jnanis, yogis, bhaktas, they will follow. And so you have one common culture that everybody can relate in. Right? It's a difficulty that we have our culture and the karmis have theirs. It's a problem. But like in India, we have this culture, and the karmis is not far so different. So they can relate. So that's the idea. All humans should be following the same culture. So now you write it in a language that everybody will go. If you say true knowledge, they'll say, yes, true knowledge about the Shrauta Yajnas and that, and so that will elevate the heavenly planets. So true knowledge means knowledge of Brahman. But we know true knowledge means knowledge about Godhead. Right? Because even material knowledge is actually a knowledge of Brahman. It's just they don't know it's Brahman, so it's illusory. Right? There's nothing less than Brahman. Right? That's the bottom line. Yes.
So it's no more specific than everybody can handle it.
Yes. Like that. Who are pious and who can follow the authority of the Veda? Mm. Like that. So if someone can't follow these, those are given then in shastras that deal on other areas, like, you know, your tantras and other things like that. People who want to break all the rules, then they make rules how to break the rules. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in other words, everybody's regulated in the Vedic culture. Like that.
So that's also, Krishna says, what can be gained through repression?
What can be gained through repression? Yeah, nothing can be regained through repression. It's proper engagement. You know, in other words, you're hungry. To not eat, that's not the thing. It's to eat what's proper. You know? Okay. You know, eating food not offered to Krishna is nonsense, so I won't eat any food. No, you eat food offered to Krishna. Okay, so see the means you always get these, you have so many rules, but you see these are the conclusions, and these are the things that nobody catches. It means all the other things beforehand, you know, we'll caught that. Oh, you do your achman like this and this and that, and you have to have the asana and face. Oh, if you face this way, you get health, and you face that way, you get wealth, and you face this way, you know. So you know, breakfast I'll sit and, you know, facing this direction, and lunch like that, and then, you know, evening like that, but there's one left out and I really want that, so maybe the 4 o'clock snack or something like that, or, you know, 11 Z's maybe.
Or a chair with you can spin.
Yeah, yeah, you could do that also. Yeah, no, but it has to have the kind where it's got the fixed thing so the meal can actually be there. And then you just slowly, slowly take your feet and go like this and just go in all the directions.
Just fly off.
Huh?
Just fly off.
Yeah, yeah, no, slowly. That's what I'm saying. You just use your toes and go like that. So you just very slowly go around.
Yeah. But not the conclusions.
Yes, but the conclusions are missed. So Mano's always going through all rules, but then he'll give what's the conclusion of it. So you have to see all those rules in connection with that. But that, so that's Mano Samhita. Mm. But the problem is if we just take out those points, we'll just say, oh, this is just, you know, Vedanta philosophy. Mm. This is just, you know, Prabhupada talks about this. This isn't Manu. Prabhupada talks about this. No, but Prabhupada's talking about Manu. Yeah. He's already pulling these conclusions and giving them. If you want the details, then you go through the book. Right? Neither the study of the Vedas, nor liberality, nor sacrifices, nor any self-imposed restraint, nor austerities, ever procure the attainment of rewards to a man whose heart is contaminated by sensuality. Right. So then, if it's not in, so you, all these other things, you won't get the benefit if the heart is contaminated by, you have that drive for sensuality, because you won't be able to do them properly. Right. So this heart has to be controlled, and so that's only going to be controlled by true knowledge. Right. So here again, so if it can't be by that, so therefore I have to control the senses. How do I control the senses? Then there's nothing as good as the constant pursuit of true knowledge. You know what I'm saying? The idea is that if it gives something, then you're supposed to go, why? And move back. Not why. We don't have to. You know, but why means, okay, so then what does that mean? That man may consider to have already subdued his organs, who on hearing and touching and seeing, on tasting, smelling anything, neither rejoices nor repines. Right? Because it's not for his enjoyment. Mm. So if he sees it in connection with Krishna, then it's because it's connected to Krishna he's happy. Not because of its sensual element. Right? Because here true knowledge means transcendence. But we don't mean Brahman platform. That's for the Brahma bodies. We mean devotional service. But when a monk... Sorry,
on this last point. So he doesn't get the result because it's illusion, right?
Well, it's not that it's illusion. Even if he's controlling the senses by, let's say, engaging them in the pursuit of the karmakanda, so that means he'll only engage the senses and cause karmakanda defines, right? According to Shastra, so then he'll be able to get the effect of his karmakanda yajna, or his sacrifice, or his charity, or his austerity. Right, but he has to follow the rules up to that. But we understand is that the real point is true knowledge. So therefore, if you have any other desire other than true knowledge or devotional service, that's going to create problem. Right? So devotees are looking how to be expert in performing, you know, being managers or organizers or, you know, collecting money or this and that. But it's actually going to happen when you're pursuing true knowledge, because then the senses are controlled, then you'll do it properly. So these other things are nice as skills, but the point is unless you have the qualification, the skills won't work. You know what I'm saying? Just like I can teach, have a driving class, teach everybody how to drive. But if someone doesn't have respect for the law, respect for other people, you know, respect for their car, they're not going to drive very nicely. So what's the meaning of me having taught them how to drive? So you won't really call them a driver. You know what I'm saying? A real driver is someone who understands that whole field and deals with it properly according to the rules. That's actually a driver. Does that make sense? Okay. But when one among all the organs slips away from control, thereby man's wisdom slips away from him, right? Krishna says, when the, you think about, you know, contemplate, then it turns into attachment, then it turns into anger, and then the intelligence slips away. Even as the water flows through the one open foot of a water carrier's skin. Right? Is that, you ever seen the water carriers?
No, but they are these peaks.
Yeah. In other words, the water carriers are who's carrying the water. It's the guys that keep the pigs. Because they clean the drains. Right? So, you have a pig skin, and you just sew it back up like the pig. You know what I'm saying? But you tie the legs. And then you hold the snout, and then you have it under your arm. So then when someplace in the drain needs cleaning, you just push, and then, you know, same kind of like a bagpipe. Just, you know, it's just water instead of air. Right? You know what I'm saying? So then, the here it means if one of those feet is open, all the water will go out, even though it's a small opening. So even one sense, it can take it. If he keeps all the 10 organs as well as the mind in subjugation, he may gain all his aims without reducing his body by the practice of yoga. So in other words, without being austere and all that, you know that the body, you're losing weight and all these things because of the austerities, you don't have to do that. You simply have to control the senses. Right, because yoga is only trying to control the senses. So therefore, if you control the senses by true knowledge, then anything you want to do gets done. So the real success is how to control your senses, which means how to engage in the Lord's service. You understand? So therefore, Bhagavatam's already the perfect self-help book. Right? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaur Vrindavan ki.